to the Republic of Middle-Aged Men. Gentlemen, it's been forever. Good to see you.
It's been a long hiatus.
It has.
It has. It's been so long that my beard grew, went from grey to black, got cut, and then got grown again, and now it's going back to grey again. There was absolutely no dye involved in that process, I promise.
It's all natural, yeah. You're right.
Yeah, now it's wisdom. It's wisdom, bid. Anyway, how are you guys? What are you drinking? I have a Canadian Club and dry, which when I went to WA for work late last year, all the guys were smashing these, and I was like, I don't remember the last time I had one of those. And I think since that trip in WA, I've probably had 100 in the last, like, 8 months. They're so good. Anyway, what are you guys drinking? Lachlan?
Mate, I'm pretty tired, so I'm on the zero alcohol Sidewinder, XPA, which it's not too bad, actually. I will only drink alcohol-free beer if it tastes as good as a regular beer, is my philosophy. So this one's not too bad.
Interesting.
Yeah, the problem with that theory is you've got to taste them all to figure out which ones taste good. So
I have worked through a few bad ones, I will admit.
I feel like there's not a lot of risk reward there. There's plenty of downside. Plenty of downside.
Yeah. The alternatives, I have a normal beer and fall asleep halfway through this podcast.
Oh, that's okay. Canadian Club. Should that not be renamed Fascist Club at this point?
Oh, there we go.
Maybe. I don't know. Would it be fascist or socialist?
The difference being... No, you can't
say. I don't know. Maybe my Australian accent threw you off for a minute there. What are you drinking there, Rubes?
I've just got whiskey and soda.
Ooh, whiskey and soda.
That's the main thing that's new for me. I figured out that if you put cheap whiskey with soda, you can stretch out your drinks and make them last longer.
Interesting. Do you have any lime or lemon in it?
No, just as is.
Okay. Just as nature made it. All right, well, speaking of things that as nature made it, the book for this season 4, by the way, gentlemen, who knew? Who knew when we started this in COVID? We're talking before we started this episode that we had done 43 episodes of this thing.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wait. What were the first ones? It was Republic.
Yep.
That's it. That's all I remember.
Oh, come on. We did Epictetus as well.
Yeah.
The Enchiridion. And then we did The Apology with Plato.
Oh, this is 4. Yeah, you're right. It is.
Yes. So just to do something different, we're doing Plato again. but we're going to do Timaeus. And guys, I am particularly nervous about this one. To our audience, just a reminder, as far as I'm aware, none of the three of us have ever done any formal training in philosophy. This is our hobby/thing we love to do with each other. And this book scares me a bit because there is so much in here that is making me have to do some extra homework and research. I'm going to show on camera. Formal
training in philosophy, I can barely read.
So I've got like a book on sacred geometry to learn about this. I've just finished reading about the Kabbalion to get my head around that, because these ideas are found within Timaeus. There's also things in there about the tale of Atlantis, so it's a very broad set of subjects I found in this book.
You mean sprawling?
Yeah,
sprawling is probably the right word.
It's got a bit in there, and I think that's like classic Plato, though. You know, you're just gonna like roll up a whole bunch of stuff and mush it together, and so it's gonna be great. We're just gonna work our way through it. We're a couple of amateurs. We're not gonna pretend to be professors from uni or something like that. So
yeah. Don't let this beard fool you. but yes, I'm really looking forward to doing it. I remember, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago when we started really looking at it, I was reading through this and just going, oh my gosh, I have to get refamiliarized with math here. Like, so I've got a pair of high school students as children, and they come to me with their homework questions, and by golly, that's been a long time since I've looked at that stuff. So quite often I'll be like, yes, I knew how to do that. Let me have 10 minutes to remember how to do that. So there's a bit of that going on with this as well.
Yeah.
But we will work through it, and we will take you, our audience, on the journey with us. Hopefully it's helpful for a lot of you guys, and you know, you might be in the same boat as us where it's new to you and you're not across all this stuff. You might be someone who knows this stuff a lot better than we do, and you're thinking, what are these guys doing? But I think it's good to just go through it one day at a time, work our way through it. I think that's part of the journey. So yeah, I think it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. What I'm planning to do, guys, is insert an edit where I will read out the introduction to this version of the book. It's only a couple of pages long. So I'll slip that somewhere into this episode as we're talking about it. Just the preface, I think it is in here. And then there's an introduction. So the version that we're looking at, it's translated and edited by Peter Kalkovich. And it's Plato's Timaeus second edition. This is the cover as we have it, and I'll make sure in the episode description that we put the Amazon link for it in there. You can get it on Kindle, you can get it paper-based like we have, or hard copy, obviously. So
yeah, we chose that that version because it seemed to have a fairly modern and well-regarded translation, and there's some really great footnotes when you sort of go through there, where Kalkovich kind of explains a few things in a little bit more detail when you want to kind of like break them out, or the terms maybe, you know, we as lay people aren't that common with. So I think it's a good version of the book for us to use, and where we see those little chestnuts, we'll be sure to sort of share the interesting ones along the way. We kind of do that anyway, like whenever like we've done the other books, and we come across some unusual sort of concepts or things like that, we always sort of have a little sidebar chat about them anyway. So this will probably just help the process along, I think.
So let's go through like what we know about it. So I chose this book, so I won't go first. Ruben, I'll start with you. What do you know about the Book of Timaeus?
Very little, apart from what you've spoken about, in terms of it's got some stories about Atlantis, and apparently it's got some kind of creation myth in there. So yeah, not much. So I guess what I'm expecting in terms of this book is that maybe it's even more abstract and more obscure than the usual Plato.
That's very possible. And it's kind of weird saying that. It's kind of like being more in depth and detailed for Tolkien than what Tolkien normally is. Like, so actually, I'm kind of curious. As a side note, I think I will reread the Silmarillion once we've read this creation story, because I want to see Tolkien. I know has borrowed from Plato before,
yeah.
So I want to read this and then see did Tolkien use any of this as well.
Well, you might I don't know, if you're interested, also you could do C.S. Lewis's Magician's Nephew, which has a creation myth in it as well, which I believe Tolkien might have got upset because he thought C.S. Lewis might have ripped his ideas off for that book. So I don't know whether that's something you'd be interested in too.
Okay, that sounds good. How about you, Lachlan? What do you know about the book?
Yeah, well, look, I think going into it, when we first discussed it, I didn't have much awareness of it at all and had thought this was something that was mostly going to be sort of like talking about like the sort of, I guess, like the Atlantis story and stuff, because I think that's why we'd sort of gotten onto it. And when I picked up the book and just started reading through like a couple of like essays and stuff had been about it, I was like, oh man, this thing's going to have some meat in it. And so I could understand why you had a little bit more sort of trepidation around it, because it's going down some pretty interesting sort of places with, you know, sacred geometry and creation story, talking about how the universe was you know created and why it exists and all this sort of thing. So there's some pretty interesting stuff to kind of cover off here. So I've only just sort of started, you know, dipping my toe in the water, reading a little bit of it, but it already feels good to get back into some Plato though.
Yeah, I had the same thing. I've only read maybe a couple of pages of it, but it is nice to be back into Plato.
Mm.
Yeah, there's something warm and cozy about Plato, even though it takes you to these very, as you said, abstract, weird lines of reasoning and thinking at times. Mm. There's something wonderfully comforting when you read Plato. It's just quite nice to read.
Well, for me, in the interim, since we've sort of had a break, I've read some Dostoevsky, I've gone to some Joseph Conrad, I've read Heart of Darkness maybe twice, maybe three times now. And then from there, I read a bit of T.S. Eliot. And I don't know, for anyone that's familiar with that sort of gear, it's pretty dark stuff. And then kind of coming back around to Plato, you're right, I do. I kind of get that little bit more of a warm and fuzzy, lighthearted is not the right term, but just, I don't know, consumable. it's just that it doesn't have that bitter taste of everything else that I've been reading for the last 6 months.
Yeah, well, I think it's that thing about like Plato likes to take you on a journey, right?
Yeah.
And so he sort of sets things up a little bit, gives you a bit of an introduction about the people and the kind of things we're going to kind of like look at. And then, I think there's a certain amount of like hand-holding going on there.
You make a good point, because when we read The Republic, even when Plato was when Socrates is about to say something that he probably knew that he shouldn't have said or that people wouldn't like, he would kind of prep you for it.
Yeah. 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 So there's a certain comfortable style to it. So so I'm sure we'll be in the safe hands of Plato as we try and fumble our way through. But
I'm interested to read Timaeus because I noticed that Socrates referred to him as a philosopher.
Yeah.
And that's high praise, man. Anyone that Socrates says that about, I think he's probably worth having a listen to and seeing what they've got to say. That's one thing I know about it. What you guys mentioned before about how Plato takes you on this journey of like many, many things. I think we established back in season one that philosophy used to be that. It used to be the study of all things. And then it sort of became honed over the centuries to be its own thing. So it kind of makes sense back in the, I guess you'd call it the early days, that it was broader.
And I think this is going to sort of bring in that, whole sort of like science and math into philosophy thing is what we're about to sort of step into, which is a bit of a different direction to what we've sort of had so far. So that'll be a new sort of challenge. Actually, and there's I should say I did notice in the book there are a few more sort of like diagrams and stuff this time around, which is different in a Platonic book as well. So see how we go with those, and I suppose share them as we talk about them as well.
I think they're necessary because they do a whole lot of numbers talking that for us who doesn't, I mean, I'm pretty sure that Pythagorean and doing math for them was their equivalent of Xbox. So like the way that we talk about loadouts for Battlefield 2042 or something, that's what these guys are talking about with shapes and dimensions. And so us as the guys that read it who don't discuss math and play math every day, those pictures are needed. So, and I'll make sure that we put those pictures on the stream as well so people can see them. So I've got a question about Plato. Do you think that Plato does feel more warm and fuzzy to read because he comes at the philosophical questions from a place of curiosity, almost like a, not childish curiosity, but like a joyful curiosity, like a curiosity of wanting and like thinking that if I find this out, it's going to be good. And so there's like a underpinning excitement almost to his curiosity, which probably isn't found in other philosophers at all times. Do you think that could be why he's warmer?
Well, I think childish curiosity is a joyful curiosity. So, yes, I think you're right. I think you might be onto something there.
I think the other thing is that I think he tries to write for the everyman audience, if you know what I mean. And I think sometimes other philosophic sort of works can feel like, and I suppose he's trying to bring it into a very real sort of place that anybody can kind of understand it.
It's also conversational, like it's written conversational. It's not written in a, you know, in a different kind of format, like an essay format or whatever. It's not even it's not even prose or whatever. It's just like just a conversation. So I mean, I don't know whether that contributes to it. It might.
Yeah, well, I think that does absolutely kind of contribute to it because it's that exchange going backward and forward, you know, between a couple of them there as they sort of like try and hash out the detail, the same as you'd question it in your mind, right? Rather than just sort of having one person explaining something. Yeah, you know, that's sort of pause, hey, what did you mean by that? You know, yeah, like let's dive deeper into that. You know?
It's exploratory rather than expository.
Yeah.
Where do we see that modern day? Like, I've been thinking about this. Because you're right. So later philosophy is more, almost I'd call it university paper. Like someone's writing their thesis on their ideas. So it's technical and structured and has a word count. All those many things that we love. Sure we do. And then, and a lot of public discussion is in a model of debating. So whether it's, you know, tribalistic debating like on Twitter or something or X, or actually having people at the front having a debate about an issue, I'm trying to think, like, really the only example I can think of a dialogue around these ideas that's long form discussion is Bloomin' Podcasts. And, you know, occasionally something like what Jordan Peterson's done with his Exodus series, where he's got a panel of seven or eight other people from different backgrounds talking about a text. You know, that's sort of another way of doing it. But I guess my point is that's a fairly new resurgence of that, or re-emergence, I should say. I mean, prior to this sort of podcast explosion that's happened in the last 15 years or so, I can't really think of a natural friendly dialogue scenario talking through big ideas that would have been consumable for us. I mean, as teenagers and young 20s, we didn't have Joe Rogan's of the world or the podcasts like that. It was, we would have seen debates, or we would have seen late night TV shows with a 5-minute conversation, or we would have read a book on it or heard a speech on it. I don't think you would have had more of that dialogue sort of interaction. So, do you think it's making a resurgence?
Yeah, I think you've answered your own question there. I couldn't disagree with that. I think that's exactly right. The only difference I would say between the podcast formats that we have now is just the immediacy of the recording. So, I mean, you had Plato, who wrote down the conversations with Socrates probably after his death. And Plato was a poet. So there's a filter there.
Yeah.
So it's probably somewhat, better presented than a free-form conversation. I don't think that's a negative. But that would be the only real difference. But I think you're right. The what you get, the closest thing we have to it now are the podcasts, the long form podcasts.
Yeah, I wonder if that's going to change the landscape.
Like, if I think it already has, mate.
Yes, but what I mean by that is, will it go back up the chain? So will philosophy based on dialogue make a resurgence in the universities?
Oh, well, I've no idea about that, but there's a lot of
think it might.
Criticism of the university system now.
Yeah, because one of the problems that they're having right now of chatbots and stuff is when people are submitting assignments, so it's getting more and more difficult to figure out, did that person write it or did a chatbot write it?
That's a good point. The way forward may be oral exams.
Yeah, it could be through dialogue.
The only way to do it.
Yeah, so we might go full circle and end up back into a form of education that requires dialogue to be considered an expert rather than a written essay or literature.
Yeah, if you can't exposit it directly in the moment, then you're not considered an expert. Well, that's interesting.
Mm. I would have to do it with debate more than anything, though, because otherwise it's probably going to come off more like rhetoric, I suppose. And like, I think that's the thing that's been good with the Plato dialogues, and probably true of some of the podcast sort of stuff as well, is that it's sort of two-way conversation and challenge sometimes. Like, you had your good old Thrasymachus in the Republic,
Thrasymachus.
As your guy in the Savior.
Yeah, that's the Aussie Western Sydney way, thrifty markets.
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, you sort of had your detractors in there as well, kind of challenging some of those concepts. So you had to kind of prove your point and all that sort of thing. So maybe debate's kind of the way to do it. Because, Rogan does that in his podcast as well, right? You know, he'll challenge and ask questions if something doesn't sound right.
To a certain extent, yeah.
Hmm.
And he's usually coming from that sort of childish curiosity.
Absolutely, yeah.
I do think that is important, and I think that is conducive to learning, is that curiosity, that childish curiosity.
I don't know about you guys, but like in my workplace, it's been observed that I am very curious and that I actually take joy in finding out new things and learning how different components of the business works and all that sort of stuff. And I don't know if that's always been the case, but I know that since we've been doing this and reading a lot more, because I've been reading quite a lot of philosophy over the last few years, that there is like this awakening of just wanting to learn stuff. And it doesn't really matter what it is. If I'm learning something new, it's kind of cool and exciting, and I don't know. Are you guys finding that since we've started doing this that you feel more excited when you learn something new, or are you like actively looking for opportunities to do new things? And that could even be like really, really small things. Like Ruben, you've got a younger one, just playing on the ground with some toys that you've never played with before. Do you find that like curious? Like, oh, this is a new type of toy, or there's something new here I didn't know. Like, do you get what I mean? Like, do you find that you're finding more joy in learning?
Yes, but I see it more as a change of approach.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps that might be a self-criticism in the sense that it's more, for me, a change in approach to finding out what I want to, not so much that there's a childish joy But just on a side note, what you said about having a little one, there is, and this is totally unrelated, but I feel like I should say it anyway. I've got older kids, and then about an 8-9 year gap, and then a really young one. And I feel like I can observe and enjoy a lot more with the youngest one than I was able to with the first ones, because the first ones were stressful, a lot more stressful because you know how you're doing and you're freaking out. And then, but by the time of my third one, he's really young. My older one's a bit older. I'd have to worry about them. So I'm experiencing what you've just described in terms of a childish or, you know, joyful learning, observing him a lot more so. So it's been a real blessing. But that's probably not answering your question. That's just how I feel about it.
But it does, because you've sort of, you're in the moment more. Like you're trying to enjoy what's just there.
Yeah. I have noticed, one thing I have noticed directly in terms of since reading and doing this podcast and reading philosophy is that my immediate response to disagreement now is to ask questions. Whereas I think when I was younger, it was to attack.
Okay. That's interesting. I haven't thought about it from that perspective. I think you're right, though. I think I'm doing a similar thing.
Well, when someone says something that I think is ridiculous, when I was younger, it was like, you're an idiot. But now, as I'm older, and this may not be a philosophy, this might just be a thing about getting older, my immediate response is, yeah, why do you think that? And like that one question sometimes can unravel someone's entire position, believe it or not.
I believe it.
Yeah.
How about you, Lachlan?
Yeah, look, I don't know about if it's changed my approach to curiosity. I think I've always been a relatively sort of curious person, but certainly having... like since started this podcast, it has changed, I think, like the direction and the kinds of things that I try and learn about and have an interest in understanding. And I suppose like really broaden my horizons quite a bit. I consume a heck of a lot of podcasts and material and stuff now on topics I never would have really thought to seeked out before. So yeah, I've gotten a lot out of it, and I have, yeah, there's definitely a change. I don't know if it's more curiosity, but it's certainly harnessing that curiosity to dive into some stuff that I wouldn't have previously. Yeah
It's hard to unwind the two, isn't it, like the age versus the impact this has had.
Well, I think that's why the title that you came up with, Timmy, for this podcast is entirely appropriate.
The Republic of Middle-Aged Men. Yeah. I find I'm able to, as I said, like be in the moment more. Like I've even noticed that I play with my dog more and I give him more attention, and I'm just like, no, I'm here. This is the now that I'm in. This animal is in front of me. He wants my attention. You know, what's 30 seconds of my time? And it's going to make him happy, and his tail will be up in the air all day if I just play with him for 30 seconds until he's worn out. So I do that. And I've noticed that that's like the same approach with the kids. So, you know, if my kids ask for my time, instead of going, wait a minute or whatever, I generally now just try and stop doing what I'm doing and go and give them that time. And it hasn't really made me run late for anything. It hasn't really made me miss out on anything, but it's making their experience nicer and it's making my experience nicer. And I think part of that was just actually through this journey of thinking through what's important. It's made me understand, hey, I invest so much energy into getting these people who I love around me, in this environment that I love around me, I should actually like mentally be in this moment and enjoy those things, because they won't last forever. So just take that time and enjoy it. And I don't know, maybe part of it is I read a lot of Ecclesiastes this year as well. So Have you ever read Ecclesiastes, either of you two?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I have a few times, yeah.
Yeah. Have you read it before, Lachlan?
It would have been a long time ago if I did.
if you're in a good mood, probably don't read it. But it's... I think once you've done a bit of philosophy, which we have, it's a good read. And the conclusions are really good. And one of those conclusions I use as an encouragement to other guys now, which is like, enjoy the life of your youth. Live, drink, eat, and be merry. Like, because, you know, at the end of the day, you can... The whole point of Ecclesiastes is like, you can have all the knowledge in the world, but the more you learn, the more you realize the world sucks, you know. And you can have all the food in the world, but, you know, the fatter you get, etc. So... Yeah. Yeah, it's a good book. It's you can probably listen to it in 20 minutes. It's not too long.
Right.
It's pretty quick, yeah. I would, and I'm not, certainly not suggesting that these two things are on the same level, but if you like Ecclesiastes, T.S. Eliot's Four Quartets is sort of in a similar vein.
Okay. I will need to look at this. You know what got me to read Ecclesiastes the first time in full? It was actually Assassin's Creed 1.
Oh, really?
It was Assassin's Creed 1. Because, spoiler alert, this is a 15-year-old game. If I spoil this for someone, bad luck. But spoiler alert. But at the end of Assassin's Creed 1, when you are fighting against your master, he quotes Ecclesiastes. At the end of Assassin's Creed 1. No, not Altair. Salah Adim, or whatever his name was. No, not Salah Adim. The guy in charge of it. Anyway, Altair's master. He quotes Ecclesiastes.
That's right.
And it's beautifully, beautifully done. But it is Ecclesiastes. And I was like, I know that. Where have I heard that before? So I looked it up. And I'm like, of course it's Ecclesiastes. So then I read the whole thing. And I must have read it 10 times since I played that game 15 years ago, because it's so good. So yeah, I can't recommend that enough. Read Ecclesiastes. It's good. Alright, so coming back to Timaeus, it's not the biggest one we've read, guys, but I'm looking at it, so it's page 94 is where it finishes, and it starts at, actually it does start at 1, so it's 94 pages long. I think that would make it 2/3 the size, maybe, of the Republic.
Is it really that long? I thought it was a lot shorter.
It's pretty. It's 94 pages on this copy.
Yeah.
So I think this one will take us well into next year, which is fine. As we said at the start, there'll be some learning we need to learn, which we don't have. So if we miss a week or two because we're having a study, that's what we'll do. But we'll do our best to work through it, and we'll see how we go. Coming back to what I know about it, the Atlanta stuff really excites me. Our plan at this point in time is we will come back to the Atlanta stuff to do a deep dive at the end. So, because I don't think it's the main point of the book, but it's also, it's pretty cool. I do want to spend some time on it. So we'll work through the book as it is, and then as like, I guess, a couple of bonus episodes, we'll do the deep dive into the Atlanta side of the stuff, and I'll have to do a lot of preparation for that. So, because I'll be taking you two on a journey with that stuff.
Yeah, sounds good.
So
this is going to be like the guy who's like, mind's expanding with like the bits of string going out everywhere. Yeah.
Yes. And I'm sure I've got some friends who teach history, for example, in high school. I'm sure I'll get some feedback. I've got people who are ministers. I'm sure I'll get some feedback. Looking forward to that. So it'll be fun. But you guys know what my man cave's like, and those listening probably don't know, but on my wall to my left, I have an area that's roughly 4 meters wide by 2 meters high with black corkboard, where I'm trying to figure out the timeline of the history of the universe. And it literally goes back billions of years with masking tape all the way at the top left-hand corner. And I've got images representing probably the last 6,000 years. So it is something I take sort of seriously, and I'm trying to figure it out. So hopefully by the time we get through the Timaeus, I've got all my ducks in a row for this Atlantis stuff and where I think it potentially could have been if it was real and what may have made it disappear, all that sort of stuff.
We'll find out in the journey, mate.
Yeah, it sounds fun.
It'll be fun. So, anyway, I think that'll do, guys. I think that's a good introduction episode. Anything else you want to add before we wrap it up?
Well, I've got a question for the pubs philosophers. If you,
let us journey.
Whoa! What? Tim asks the questions at the pub.
Hey, it's a new season, so we can do some new rules.
The only reason I'm raising it is because Tim sort of opened the door because he was talking about Assassin's Creed. But I saw you got, was it like VR or AR Assassin's Creed? I didn't quite get to watch the clip, but tell me.
Yes. So I got Assassin's Creed Nexus on the Oculus Quest 3. It starts off augmented, so it feels very Iron Man. So I can see my man cave, but there's this three-dimensional puzzle menu in front of me floating in the air that I have to move around, which is awesome. And then you're in the Animus machine, which for those who haven't played Assassin's Creed is a game that reads your genetic memory. So then you can simulate what happened in your ancestors' past. And the very first level, you get to be in Venice during the Renaissance. And you play as a guy called Ezio, who's my favorite assassin. You can see his outline behind me. That's Ezio right there. And it's virtual reality, so it's awesome. You've got two assassination blades on your wrists. You can climb walls. You can sword fight and block. You can pick up stuff and throw it. It's awesome. It's so good. I've played half of the first level. It probably took 20 minutes. I streamed it on Facebook. So good, so good. Yes, I do play a lot of Beat Saber and Vader Immortal on VR, and both of those games are going to gather dust for a while because this Assassin's Creed game is just amazing. It is so good. So
I'm keen to watch the rest of the clip and get a view on it because, like, I've always enjoyed that series of games as well. So pretty cool to be able to get immersed in some of that, because that's the thing, right? Those games have always done such a great job of dropping into you that time and place in history.
Yeah.
And I think to be able to sort of, you know, be in a VR environment where you can kind of, like, you know, look around some of them, like, that's got amazing potential.
One of the levels is from Assassin's Creed Black Flag. So you can, like, climb the rigging and jump from sail to sail on your big tall ship and then jump down on deck and sword fight. And I'm sure that they'll be shooting cannons and all sorts of stuff. Like, it looks, it's so good. As I said, I sunk almost half an hour into it and I didn't even do the whole first level. And I think there's like 15 or 16 missions. Sorry?
I'm just watching some of it now. The graphics are not terrible, man. Like, they're getting up there.
The new headset, which I got the Quest 3, it's about 50% more powerful than the 2 was. Yeah. So your range of vision is wider, and the resolution is much higher, and the frame rate is better. So even for Beat Saber, I've noticed a really noticeable difference where, because it's running like 30 frames a second faster, you just don't get any latency or glitching at all. So I just seem to be getting better scores because there's nothing from the system causing me to make mistakes now.
Yeah.
I feel like the 2, it was sort of really pushing its limits to play Beat Saber. But 3, it does it so easy. It just runs silky smooth. So
I'll have to come over and give it a go. Because maybe with, like, the... how the you know, the res and the smoothness now might save me some nausea.
Yeah. Well, they've got comfort adjustment settings in it as well. So I maxed everything because I don't get sick in it. So I had like full climbing and jumping and falling. And you can do like the leap of faith in it as well. So you jump off like the top of a bell tower and fall to the ground, which on VR is... that your stomach and your balance says, I am going to die. And so it's this very strange feeling where you fall like 200 meters and then you're okay. It's like, So,
yeah. And then you have to get back up off the floor, you know?
Yeah, there's footage of some people falling into TVs and things playing this. Yeah. So you'll be careful.
Yeah, you might need a bit of space.
But no, it is very good. The augmented reality is brilliant. I also purchased for $15 an app to learn how to play piano. And it can, because it's all augmented reality, you can see everything in your room. You can draw a virtual piano on your desktop and play piano just on your desk. Because it sees where your fingers go and plays all the notes. And it does it Guitar Hero style. So it brings all the stripes down, what number of finger you should be using. And it has the music sheet in front of you. But the other thing you can do is do that at your own piano. So we've got a piano in the lounge room. And my daughter's learning how to play piano. So she put it on. We configured it to show where all the keys are. And then on our actual piano, it does the Guitar Hero graphics coming onto the keys for her. So she knows where to hit and what to do with the sheet music in front of her. It hears everything you play and it gives you a score as you go.
Yeah, that's genius. That's what we should be using that stuff for.
Yeah, man.
Exactly where we should be going with that tech.
She went from doing her normal practice sessions of 5 minutes. She played for like 40 minutes straight because it made it a game. Because all of a sudden, I need to beat that score. I need to get 3 stars. Like it tapped into that gamer mentality that the kids have.
I feel bad for piano teachers because they're now out of a job, but...
Yeah, potentially. It's not perfect, but it's damn good. And I think give it a year or two, that'll be a very, very cheap way to learn how to play piano. Like if you did that for half an hour every day for a year, you'd be playing very well.
You'd go all right. Yeah. That's clever.
And when you think about the price of a headset being like $700 and then the app's $15, if you do 100 lessons, that's a very cheap lesson.
I wonder Will you tell me when they've got the software so that I can do this with Iron Man style, rebuilding my Datsun so I can put the augmented reality and it can show me what I'm supposed to put things back in there.
You joke, but I do wonder in the future what level of application that would have for other things.
They could for sure do that with like dealers, I reckon. Yeah, because they'd have like a set catalog of current model cars. Yeah, augmented reality. Okay, we're going to rebuild the gearbox today. You know, like
or even like you like even if you bring someone into your house to, or not even bring them into your house, but remotely, you just want to redo your kitchen or whatever. You put on the headset and start moving stuff around. You know,
like, bringing it back to a philosophical idea. I look forward to the day where I can do an augmented reality where Socrates sits opposite me via an animated Socrates and a chatbot system that only ties into the writings of Plato. And then I can have a chat with Socrates in my lounge room.
Would you have to like feed him augmented food in order to keep him talking?
I don't know, but he has to be animated with Crocs.
Yeah. Which way to thou buffet?
Yeah, no, but that surely that will happen. The way chatbots are going and the way they're starting to incorporate those into games.
No, for sure.
Do yourself a favor. Google Unreal Engine 5 with chatbots. I think I showed you this, Ruben. I'm not sure if I showed you Lachlan. It's amazing. This guy is using his headset to... So he walks up to any NPC in this Unreal 5 city that's been used for the Matrix demo that they did a year ago, and every single NPC character has its own chatbot software, and so they all have their own personality, And he goes up to them and starts talking to them and tries to convince some of them that they're in a simulation, and they get annoyed or angry or upset. And he asks them all these different questions, like, oh, I'm doing this for my job, I've got a family at home, and like, it's so strange. Every single walking person in that game has their own chatbot personality, and they're all different.
That's cool.
It's cool, but it's weird. So, all right, guys, I think we'll call it. For those listening, thanks for sticking with us, and please order your copy of Timaeus. But as usual, we will read out line by line the book and put it on the screen. So if you don't have it or you can't be bothered reading it, we will read it out for you as we go and put it up there for your convenience. And just like this podcast, middle-aged men are not built in a day, and I was the Republic, and I've got that whole line wrong, but that's okay. We've been out for a while. So I'll get my lines right for next episode. Thanks for listening to the Republic of Middle-Aged Men. Guys, see you soon.
Catch up.